أهلا وسهلا ومرحبا بكم في Unboxed.
Welcome to the Unboxed podcast. Alrighty, you guys ready to go?
Yeah, I feel like we're already recording.
We might be. Was that sneaky?
Potentially. Okay.
We might be what?
Recording.
Oh.
Rima Jafali.
أهلا.
How you doing?
I'm doing well.
It's good to have you.
It's good to be in Bahrain. Visiting you guys.
يعني صراحة ريما, I was so excited to meet you. For several reasons. سمعت أشياء جدا كثيرة عندك. Other than your exciting things, I've heard that you're just an overall amazing person. I've been really looking forward to this. Please ignore my voice. I'll try not to sound sick, but like very... The winter is catching up to me.
It is, right?
Yeah.
I had the pleasure of meeting Rima towards the end of last year during a very special time in the history of motorsports.
Yes.
She became the first female, Saudi female driver to race in the kingdom.
Yeah.
So that was pretty intense month for you.
Oh, yeah. Lots was going on. hard to believe even now that you're saying it. I'm like, yeah, I did that. Like, listen, it's still too good to be true, I think. Definitely one of those.
Yeah, I remember. So you had that race in Diriyya. It was a street race. Mm-hmm. You were a guest driver for the support race for the Formula E. And you also did a half Ironman. You had a support race for the Formula One in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
Sounds like an intense month.
Yeah, it's been an intense year, I have to say. I don't even know where to start. I think... I'll just talk about that month in itself, and that was by far the most fun, action-packed month that I had. I got the, alhamdulillah, the pleasure and the opportunity to do the Jaguar race in Riyadh. And they, you know, called me up. They're like, oh, Rima, you know, we have this race in Riyadh. Would you want to be a part of it? And I'm like, okay, sure. But it's nothing like I've driven before. I haven't driven an electric car. I hadn't driven... a four-wheel drive car. They're like, in racing terms, I had never done any of what they were going to ask of me in a street circuit.
A street circuit too, first time.
First time. Yeah. Everything was a first. The whole experience was first. And let alone, I was going to be driving for Saudiya for the first time. So I couldn't say no, of course. I had to. It was scary, but I said, you know, another thing I wanted to try. And then, yeah, after that was the Formula One event in the Formula Four, which is what I do now full time. For the last year, I've been doing Formula Four. So that was on a big stage in front of like Formula One fans. And again, another really cool experience and learning experience. And then just after that, my friends and I, for fun, decided to join an Ironman, this relay for an Ironman. So I didn't do the full thing. I just did the bike. But it was like such a cool thing to do with friends, such a mental, physical challenge that you kind of share together. After that, I was like very drained. I came back home. I was like, wow, this is what it feels like to just do nothing. You know, I have to wake up and think, oh, I have to do this now. I have to do that now. Like it was hard for me to switch off. It was like just so much adrenaline, so much like positivity at the same time. And yeah, it was really good. Really good.
Yeah, it's interesting how your body... almost it has to balance itself out. So when you go through an extreme high, which I'm sure you went through, doing these races and finishing this race, the triathlon, and then suddenly you have some time to yourself. It almost feels like your body crashes. You go into a low, and
yeah, I think I was in denial of the low. You know, I didn't. I was like, what is this? You know, this is not. It wasn't that I wasn't sad. I wasn't. I was just. I felt like. Like anxious, you know, I wanted to do something. I wanted to go there. I'm like, I have to answer these emails. Like, I just wanted to keep finding something to do. And then I realized I was just chasing and I was just going after, like, I did have things to do, but I also needed to rest. And I was, it was just having, like, listening to your body and telling yourself, okay, what do you need? You know, you need rest. And then eventually it took me a while, but I got there. I chilled.
How did you step out of it?
So I listened to this really cool podcast about this driver. His name is Billy Monger. He is a driver who actually got into a bad car accident or race accident at a young age, and how he overcame. This podcast was about how he overcame it, and it's like actually a very exciting podcast and makes you want to do more. And I recommend it to everybody. It's called, I think, Happy Place. And mm-hmm. the podcast is the title is Billy Monger, the guy, his name. And just kind of hearing his story made me realize like there is a time and place for everything. And sometimes you just need to like slow down and reevaluate, let's say. And that's what I needed to do. I just needed to like take it in and enjoy what I had done and what just happened. Because it was hard to believe. Like I still, till now I'm saying it and I'm like laughing and smiling because I'm like, oh my God, I did that. And I'm that person, which is still happening to me.
It's looking at you from the outside. It's hard to believe it's only been a year. Is that when you got into motorsports?
Yeah. So my first official race was October 27, 2018. So a little over a year now. And I can tell you guys how it started before you asked me the question. But I imagine that's coming. racing, how did that happen? I cars in general for me have always been like that thing that I loved as a kid. I was like, let's say a tomboy from like most of my, you know, childhood. Loved sports, football, basketball, all of the above. But again, يعني, and I'm in Jeddah. I grew up in Saudi. تخرجت من السعودية. I lived with certain parameters. You know, I had a certain space that I was, well, that things that I could do and things that I couldn't do. And driving wasn't something that I could do. So that also, and I'm quite a realistic person. I don't really have like, I no nonsense. It's very much like black or white. And I'm not a very big dreamer either. Like, and it's realistic stuff that I, when I think of something, I'm like, can I do it? Yeah, okay. That's how it goes. But racing wasn't even a dream. It wasn't a possibility for me. It was just, it's cool. That's nice, you know? And an outsider from there. And I didn't know anyone who raced, nothing like that. But it was always from afar, watching, looking at cars, like liking classic cars. I ended up like liking those and getting into that. And then I watched a race. It was a Le Mans race. It's like an endurance race. So it's a different type of race to Formula One, different strategy, a whole different thing. And I just was like, oh my God, there's more to cars and racing than I thought. And then that sparked my interest. And then from there, the interest, let's say like the aha moment is what initiated me even thinking about it. And when was it? I think that must have been in college. So I want to say like 2012, around that time where I started to like realize that there's a world of racing. And obviously then I was studying in Boston, you know, still dealing with like being a college student and doing all of that sort of stuff. My priorities were elsewhere. Yeah. Racing was just something that I was interested in. And then obviously after college, I graduated, it's like, okay, now I want to work, you know, I want to go, you know, show my muscles kind of thing. And then went and said, worked in London and worked in New York in finance. Actually, I wanted to kind of venture into that world and see what can come of it and where I would be placed. And then I think that was like 3 years after graduation. And this whole time, I was racing was a thought that it was like a haunting thought. It was like, I need to do it. I want to do it. But how am I going to do it? Where am I? When am I going to do it? I forgot this part. So as a graduation present to myself in college, I was like, stop kidding yourself. What do you really want? What do you want to do? And not as a career, but just for fun. I was like, I want to race. So I got myself like a 3-day racing school experience in Florida, Orlando, somewhere near there. And I graduated, went on my own, did this 3-day racing school. And that feeling that I felt in the car was like, when I recall it, it's like goosebumps. Like it was the happiest I'd ever felt. It was the connection, like just mind blown me. So that experience, and that's when I decided that racing wasn't something I was going to ignore. It was just a matter of time when I am going to do it, and when I had the time, when work wasn't in the way. It was all about that. But the first time I knew I was going to race was that kind of present to myself. Yeah.
So by that point, were you familiar with cars? Could you drive cars well? what level were you at when you
started that course? So driving is funny. Like, I never had a driving class per se. I mean, my dad taught me, people around me, my uncles, like, you know, I sit with them in the car and they're like, okay, and in closed areas, not really in public roads. Not to say that I didn't do that. Of course I did. Of course I had to wear the hat and the sunglasses for Jidda, you know, like driving incognito. But yeah, so I kind of like, I wouldn't say I taught myself to drive, but I didn't have a formal education to driving. I just learned by being in the car, by looking at what people were doing, and like all that sort of stuff. And I started driving. I did my driving test soon as I went to Boston. The first thing I did when I went, I forgot about all of that stuff. And I was like, I want to get my license. Like, how do I get my license? And all the bureaucracy, paperwork you need to do. I went back maybe 5 times. Khalas, I was going to like pull the hair out of my head. Like, I just wanted to get my license. And no one knows this, and you will be the first to know now that I tell you. So I went to do my license. And one thing I never learned was parallel parking. Okay. I was like, Khalas, you know how to drive, all is good. It's not good. So I went and so I practiced parallel park, all is good. I'm like, okay, Khalas, I sorted everything out. I know how to parallel park. I go to this test. This guy, old guy, sitting, Manek kid, sitting next to me. And I'm sitting there driving the car and all is good. And then he turns, he's like, okay, please do a 3-point turn. A 3-point turn, it requires you to go, like, if it's a one-way road or two-way road, you turn left, you back, go reverse, and then you go back to the right direction of the lane. So you turn a U-turn, but in a narrow road.
Gotcha.
So I was like, I can do this easy. So I turn, do the left. But when I come back, I was just so good at the turn, I ended up at the opposite side of the road, not at the... like, because we did it, well, there's no signs on the road, there's no like arrow in, arrow that, it was just like a one way empty road.
You need to reverse.
I just was like, I can do the turn, so like so confidently, and I went back to where we were, and then I failed. I failed my driving test. Yes, not many people know this, but I failed my driving test because I was too confident in the 3-point turn, and I ended up on the opposite side of the road. And then, yeah, I did it again and I passed, and that's the story of my driving.
Wow. Yeah. On that note, I have a confession to make. Okay. It actually makes your story sound pretty normal. I failed my driving test about 7 times. Mm-hmm. This was in China, and also I failed twice in Japan. So I've failed driving tests for a total of 9 times.
Wow. And what do you do again?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I made every mistake you could, but like the type of mistake you wouldn't expect to be a mistake.
Yeah.
So we're in an empty, you know how it is. It's an empty parking lot. Yeah. There's no one around.
Yeah.
The driving test was over. I thought it was over at least. And he looked at me and he said, you did a pretty good job. All right, I opened the door, so happy. It's like, oh, you didn't do a bicycle check. So you're supposed to, in Japan, before you open the door, you always need to look back and make sure there's no bicycle speeding by you. I know we're an empty parking lot. I know there's it's not going to be a bicycle. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so.
I failed once in the States. I failed once, and you guys failed like 9 times here. And once I should be a racer.
Hey, there you go.
To you guys. But no, I failed in the States for a very stupid reason. I did everything right, but when I parallel parked, I wanted to check if I was within the lines. So I opened the door.
Oh.
He failed me. And now I can't speak. But yeah, you're not supposed to do that.
How do you check?
Just with the mirrors. Okay.
Cool.
Oh, I even have, even better, I just realized, an even better story. Oh, wow. Driving. So, ahlan fi Saudiya. Okay, so we can drive now in Saudi, all of that jazz. My American license expired. I went هذا قبل ما سمحوا okay for women to drive. I go to them. I'm like, oh, okay, هنا رخصتي الأمريكية, like, you know, بس ممكن تحولوا لي إياها to Saudi, because that's my sister who barely like she drives, but يعني isn't a commuter like me, who I need to get from one place to another driving. She just حولت her license easy, and that was it. And they're like, لا منتهية رخصتك. We can't renew it for you. We can't renew your license because it's expired. And I was like, okay, طب, يعني, what can you do? And they're like, oh, you need to do 6 hours. I was like, huh? Ish? 6 hours? I've been driving for at least 8 years, okay? And this was last year, end of last year. Okay. At this point, guys, I was already racing. No. I was racing in Emirat, okay? I go to this really cute, actually nice lady. I'm actually happy I ended up doing a driving lesson. And this is my first one. I think I was 27 in Saudi, of all places. This lady, really nice lady, comes and she, come on, I think there is a butter or something like that. And she's like, okay, and it's a parking lot, and it's very like, they teach you very detailed things, like how to park nose in, nose out, how to do an X parking, how to like, just a lot of things that I didn't even have to learn for anywhere else. Wow. But it's all within a parking lot, nothing on the street. Anyway, so I did the 6 hours, and at the end of 6 hours, I'm like, she's like, I'm like, تصدقيني لو قلت لك إنه, you know, أنا سابق. She's like, سابق إيش? I was like, سيارات. And then she's like, بلاهي عليك. I'm like, yeah, I do that. So then I pulled out my phone. I just wanted to see her reaction. Pulled out my phone. She's like, wow. And then I started teaching her about traction control in the car, in this Camry, in the parking lot of this government university. فأنا قلت لها أوريك كيف تفحطي. She's like, I'm like, بس, she's like, إيه بس, I'm like, طب ما حي يعني ما حيعاقبوكي. She's like, لا روحي هناك. And she pointed like to a far place. So I showed her how to do a very sharp turn with traction control on, which means the car is like stabilizes itself. And I was like, الحين حوريكي لما طفي. بس I'm like, بس ما حطلع صوت عشان ما يخانقوكي. فبس حسي السيارة. She's like, okay. So I turn off traction control and like I swing the car around and then her face lights up. I was like, حسيت? She's like, ايوه, حسيت, wow.
I think she's
gonna be the next one.
Yeah.
So it was really cool. Like, it was a cool experience, but to say that I had to do a 6 hours, and then that's what rough. Happened is 2 weeks and 6 hours where you have to get up and be there at 8 a.m. You need to drive. I have to get up at 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. to get there. It was a hoso. Mm-hmm. But after 2 weeks, they did this thing which was called تقويم. Okay, and لما تجي وعندك expired license or whatever, they test you and they see what level you are. And if you're good, then you do the test. Then you can do the test straight away.
Right.
The driving test. I had to go for 3 days and do the test. And I just thought it was the funniest thing.
What you get for trying to be an early bird.
There we go. Yeah. There we go. But yeah, funny story.
Yeah.
So, Anna, الحين... you're not a dreamer.
Yeah.
But it's also, I feel like it's a خطي خطوة. A lot of people don't take when they're passionate about something. اللي هي مثلا the graduation gift you give to yourself of going. So what would you say to anyone who's listening اللي عنده حلم يحس إن it's very out of reach. لا يعني هذا حلم بس. What would you say to encourage them to take that first step?
So I think I'll start by explaining how I felt in the situation because it's the best way for me to say it without just giving words to it. For me, racing meant so, so much to me that it was that I protected it almost inside. Like I was so afraid to venture in, to try it because of not fear of failure, but just fear of how am I going to do it? What am I going to do? How is this going to make me feel? I don't know. And it's just, it's doubt, it's lack of any knowledge. You don't know what I don't know what I'm getting into. It's just like the unknown. It's something like you feel like it's so far away. You feel like you can't grab it and it's so far away, but it's actually just there. It's right there. And the thing that I that made the difference for me and at least how I took the leap or the is I was just like, I had to be real with myself and tell myself what it is that made, what is it that's going to make me happy in the sense of not, oh, I'm going to go and I'm going to go, I don't know, make me happy in the real sense of how can I be a better person by making myself more fulfilled Like it was almost in that sense. Okay. But I didn't know that that's what I was doing. I'm making the question a lot longer, the answer a lot longer than it's supposed to be. But I basically just told myself, what is it that you like? What is it that you want to do and that you've been wanting to do for 4 years? Like there was a lot of things. On my top of my list was I had a list because I'm a person who does lists also. On top of my list was get your racing license. Second on my list was learn Spanish. Third on my list was guitar. And fourth on my list, which is no longer on my list, is marathon. Okay? That I scratched out, but I did something else instead. But those were things on my list. And this whole idea of, you know, you have these things that you want to do and you want to start, but you don't know how to start. So I did start Spanish. I did start guitar, but nothing really hooked me like racing did. So when I did do that, which was like I did the research, I did everything you can possibly do, but the hardest thing till now, I've done quite a few things this year. The hardest thing for me was to take the step and just say, hey, I'm going to do this. I don't know how, I don't know where, it's trusting. I'm like, Tabiallah, this is the hardest thing was taking the step towards something that means so much to you, you know, putting that aside and saying, okay, I'm going to do it.
And what's the hook?
The hook was the feeling. It was the feeling of control, of just oneness, I would say. It was like you imagine like having, how would I describe this? Is like after, I can explain to you, like after I was in the car on that one day, for maybe 3 days after, I was on this happy high. You know, I was just very smiley, very like excited, I just was a much happier and pleasant person, you know, to be around in general. Not that I'm not pleasant, but yeah, anyway, I could have my moments. But yeah, it was just like it was my hook was that, and then I think that's what gave me the courage to pursue it, because if I didn't try to do it or try to take the step towards racing, I would never have known. So I guess what I would say to her, the question, which now I'm answering, is you won't know if you don't try.
I love that. And maybe for people who are listening who aren't very familiar with motorsports in general, or maybe even circuit racing in particular, which is what you do now, I think it would be interesting for you to just talk us through what a lot of people just think it's getting in a car and driving. Yeah. What is it about? Like
what is it about?
How would you describe the sport that you do?
Okay, so it's a lot. So I mean, for someone who is racing, I don't spend as much time as you think on the track. You know, I don't just get in a car and go on track. You kind of wish that you can do that all the time, but you don't. So most of the time, let's say on a even before a race weekend, like I want to learn how to drive on track. You go, you watch some video of someone else driving on the track. And look at what he's doing and where he's turning, where he's braking, like very specific points. And then they're like, okay, as well as this, you need to understand how the car feels when the car is about to, if you're turning the car too much and it's not turning, what does that mean? If the tires go flat, what does it mean that your tires go flat? You know, like what it means to race or how can you start racing? It's for me, everything was new. It's like a first of many different things, but going back to it, it's, you're not on the track as much as you like or would hope. Like if I was to drive to a race weekend in the UK, I'd probably drive 3 hours to get there. So I'm there 3 hours. I'm probably there for 4 days. And out of the 4 days in total, I may be on track for 3 hours of the 4 days. So imagine like getting up at 7 a.m., going, you go to your team, they give you a brief and you watch the video of someone driving or the quickest person who drove. Then you take your notes and you're like, okay, this is you. In every corner, you have your notes of this is what I'm going to do here. This is what I'm going to do there. And then eventually, after all of this planning and stuff, you finally get into the car and you can implement it. But you only have 30 minutes or whatever, you know, like you don't have like an ample amount of time and stuff to just test
if
and stuff.
If it's a new track, you want to get as confident as you can with that track. So you're learning the track as quickly as possible.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting how the sport sort of moved from being, I think it used to be more of an art. It used to be just a gut feeling. Mm. Some racers were fast, some weren't. People didn't really know why. But yeah. I think now it's sort of transitioning into a science. Mm-hmm. Every single thing is backed by data points.
Oh, yeah.
And it's amazing. Like you can before going, you can see like, okay, this is the optimal, ideally in an ideal mm-hmm. situation. You know that, okay, if I want to break as late as possible and as hard as possible, but not too hard that I'm locking the wheels. Mm-hmm. I need about this much pressure.
Yeah.
Need to gradually release it as I get to the corner. Stay on like this, the fastest possible race line. Get on the throttle as quickly as possible.
Yeah. and the changes that you're talking about are like, it's like, we're talking about tenths of seconds or hundreds right. of seconds. So it's not something like given someone like myself who hasn't had this, I guess, racing that's like second, my what do you call it? Like second language or
second nature.
That's the word. It's not my second nature. I had to like teach myself how to do these things and feel these things. So yeah. most of the time when they tell me you need to break later and they tell me 20 meters later, for me, it's like, okay, how late can I go? What does that mean in the car? You know, translating what they're telling me to do. It's a very different thing. And like now I'm finding, and before I found earlier on that I was braking, like with my braking, because it's like the thing that you can judge where the driver is I was braking too early and I was very like hesitant and I wasn't getting on the power and like all of this. It kind of explains to the people who are analyzing where you are. Now I'm braking too late. So I'm like over eager and I'm like going for too much. And they're like, slow down. This is not how you do it. You need to, you know, so it's just like, it's so funny where before I was too early and now I'm too late. I'm like, okay, for finding that middle ground and like racing in itself has taught me so much more than just racing. And that's not because it's racing. It's because I think I'm fulfilling a part of me that is like, and I guess I'm so fulfilled in racing that now I want to do other things and I want to, you know, explore other sides of myself and I want to be a better version of me for racing, but it's also for me. So it's really cool. Like that, I think that's something that the biggest surprise I think from racing that I felt.
Yeah, I was really impressed by the level of detail you're going into. Like mm-hmm. you mentioned the genetic testing that you're doing yeah. and the just amount of commitment you're putting into this, I think it's amazing.
Yeah,
it's the right way to do it.
It's honestly like I didn't think about any of these things before I started. Like people ask me all the time, they're like, how did it feel to race for the first time? Because like before in end of October I was the first Saudi to race, and like this title of the first, it wasn't something that I like identified with. I really just identified with, I'm going to race for the first time. That was my thing. It was like, this is your race. Like I was just about me really. And then I after that, I kind of got the questions of like, oh, how does it feel to be this person for that? And it was any, how can I explain it? Like I was only thinking about myself and about what I wanted to do and what I wanted to achieve. And to a certain extent, I still have that drive that it's about racing and it's about where I want to get to and how I can get there as quick as possible and be the best racer that I can be. But I'm realizing now that it's a lot bigger than just me, you know, that I have any, and alhamdulillah, I'm thankful for this opportunity that I'm given, but I'm like now able to connect to people. I'm right. able to like.
I mean, I think a lot of people look up to you. I think you're, you symbolize the change that's happening in the kingdom, and you're inspiring a lot of people to push out of their comfort zone to try new things, regardless of whether or not they're into cars. But
yeah, it's super. Honestly, like even saying, I get shy. You know, you say that, that I'm like, I feel like I'm humbled by this kind of response that I'm giving other people. Because imagine just doing something that you really care about and you love, and all of a sudden you're getting this positivity, this response, this encouragement from strangers. It's honestly like I now understand what it means to connect with someone you don't know and how it's so rewarding, and it's a lot. in the end of the day, it's just trusting that you're doing the right thing, that, you know, I don't want to, you know, not be true to myself. I do want to be true to myself. And I think that's something that I'm very grateful for the fact that if I started racing in 2014, which is what I was going to be the case if I did not work and not do what I was going to do, I don't think the reception would have been like this. I wouldn't have been. So I really feel like things happened for a reason at the right time. Like doors opened the right. I meet this person for the right reason who connects me to this person. But I would only have literally like I would have only received that if I put it out there, if that makes sense. So like with racing, I put out there that I want to race, and I was thinking about racing, and then all of a sudden I met someone, and that someone ended up introducing me to my team, and the team ended up, so it was, and all of these connections, that even the genetic thing that he just mentioned, the test that I did, I didn't choose to do the genetic test. I've been in my head thinking I want to become better physically, I want like to be mental clarity, I want to be physically fit, I want to be like emotionally balanced and stable, like I want these things. And I was at this triathlon, there was a booth of guy who was talking about this genetic testing, and my friends are like, Rima, you should do it. I'm like, oh, okay, sure. And then all of a sudden here I am today talking about how I want to better myself. But it was all the intention, I guess, that I put out there. Wow. I feel like I'm talking too much.
That's why you're here.
Can you guys talk for a bit?
I do have one question though. Yeah. Ish, اللي فهمت منك إن أنت دخلتي في موضوع ال racing for yourself. يعني you weren't trying, ما دخلتي بنية إنه والله أبغى أنشهر أو أبغى إنه يعني I become the first anything. I was just doing it for myself. إيش كان أصعب شيء يعني واجهتي in that transition between I'm doing something for myself, okay, فجأة everyone knows my name, فجأة I'm representing something أكبر من نفسي. What was the hardest part about that?
I think it was the responsibility, because, you know, in the any, I've been, or still am, quite a private person. I do things, let's say I'm not someone who goes around and talks about what I do all the time. Like, that's not my nature. I think the biggest thing was accepting that by sharing that I would be positively impacting other people's lives. So it was me having to go out of my comfort zone and say, this is bigger than you and this is going to help other people, and all you need to do is be you. And I was like, oh, wow. You know, like I had like an aha moment. Yeah. And I think that is also another thing that is so empowering for me, is if a Saudia, when I was racing and I didn't realize because I was in the car, you know, I told you guys, I think about all of these things and I have to learn the track and it's so narrow and I'm not thinking about Saudia. I was only thinking about racing. And then I'm driving and there's like this in Dar'iya, there's like a long part of the track that you have a time to like breathe. So like I was in the race and I was like, and I look up, and like I get mid-race, your adrenaline rush, you know, you don't get goosebumps. I got goosebumps. I was like, oh my God. Like, استوعبت what was happening. And then after the race and after like a lot of things happened, and it was intense for me, just, I guess, getting the attention, having, you know, to be like be available. And that's something, being available, being there, being present all the time. It was draining but rewarding in the end of the day, because I was like, and I told myself, I'm like, اتخيلي انتي لما كنتي صغيرة, would you have ever believed that you are going to be a racing driver? You know, like, this is what I asked myself. And there was no way. I even thought I would be a football player. I didn't believe that either. You know, none of these things I believed. And then the end of the day, I was like, you're not just a racing driver, you are you in your own country. And like that was, يعني, alhamdulillah, like it's the biggest, I guess, reward I got out of all of this, is the fact that I could be myself and not just be myself with my family and friends, but in front of everybody, and just be comfortable with who I am. And that's been really rewarding. Yeah.
Did you see any of this coming? Because, I mean, in a sense, you are doing something that's... You're going into new territory. Mm-hmm. You're doing something that hasn't been done before. I guess maybe it's, I don't know, within the realm of possibility. Something like this might...
I thought it was something that was going to happen in the sense, in the back of my mind, you know, this could potentially spark interest. Because when I did tell people I would race in the UK, for example, because that's where I was training before my first race, they were all like shocked. In Fajr, I went, oh, you're from Saudi? You are from Saudi and you're racing. Can people in your country drive? You know, and I'm like, yeah, actually, we just started driving, you know, like, and yeah, I have that.
No one can say that.
No one can say that anymore, yeah. But they were all like, and people who are in the racing world, and if that can shock them, then I kind of had a suspicion that there will be like, mm-hmm. you know. But in the end of the day, I didn't give it enough attention, let's say, to think more of it. I was just really thinking about racing. And I was like, oh, potentially, you know, the newspapers will ask about me or something like that. But it wasn't something I had the time to think about, or I didn't want to think about it, actually. Maybe that's the truth. I didn't want to think about it. I was like, okay, I'll just go and see how it goes. And this whole year, that's what it's been for me. Everything has been, it's new, go experience it. And don't be not afraid of failure, but it would be like, don't be afraid to try. Don't be afraid to get it wrong. Because the best thing they told me in the beginning of the year was, my team was like, you're going to be, because like all of these guys I'm racing against have like eight plus experience, yeah. like years more experience than I do. There's no one who I know who's been a year into racing and is doing what I'm doing, because it's unheard of to get into this kind of racing with no experience. Usually, and in, I know I sound like a crazy person, but it's you come in with a little bit more karting background or something else and then get into single seater or what I'm doing in Formula 4. But I was experiencing everything for the first time. So like how to get into the car, how to start the car, how to not let the car stall, you know, like how to drive around the track, how to drive around the track in the rain, how to, like just all of that stuff. And they told me, and I think it's the best thing they said, they were like, you are going to be in the back. You're not going to be on the front. You're not going to be even in the middle. You're going to be last. And I knew that going in, that I was going to be last. But I knew that that wasn't going to be last for long. For the beginning of the season, I was telling people I was chasing the pack. You know, I wasn't racing with them. I was chasing them. Mm-hmm. And then I got to a point where I was eventually with them. So behind them, still chasing, but not racing on my own. And then I eventually was racing them. It took like less than six months, let's say. Because I think the whole season was 6 months, but towards the end of the season, I was actually like competing. I was fighting for like top 10 finishes. And for that in itself, for me, was a win. It wasn't a win to أطلع الأولى. لا, for me, the goal was ما أولاً was ما أطلع الأخيرة. That was the beginning. Yeah. And then it was, okay, لا, لا, the beginning was to finish the race. And then it was, okay, ما أطلع الأخيرة. And then it was, okay, أبغى أطلع العاشرة or more, you know, like 10th or higher. And in the end, I did that. And that was my win. So I think setting these like realistic goals and knowing what is what you're capable of and just being patient about it, not kind of going, getting ahead or jumping ahead of yourself. But that was a lesson that I had to learn. And I guess because I'm a little bit older than a lot of these racers, yeah. I had that maturity to say to myself, it's okay that to make a mistake, to crash, to spin. Like I didn't feel bad when I did something wrong. I just saw that as you're learning. This is a learning part of learning. And now it's getting to a point where I've done this for a year. If I do a mistake, I can tell myself, okay, you shouldn't have done this mistake. But Annie, it's in the beginning, no, it was like being nice to myself kind of thing.
Go for it.
So I'm gonna approach this from a شوية different angle. غير إنه يعني سعودية ما سعودية and the first وهذا. Generally, I guess as females, when we go in to something, لما ندخل في مجال أو نعرف إن إحنا في مجال dominated by men, diamond in the back of your mind يكون في this little voice. No matter, it might be the voice. And I don't want to go through my life thinking, is this happening because I'm a female? Is this not happening because I'm a... هذه الأسئلة اللي يعني to be honest, nobody wants to ask. But sometimes it comes into your mind. ف I want to ask, يعني in your day to day, يعني doing what you do, do you see, like if, I don't know how to ask this question, but do you ever, يعني do you look at yourself as just, I'm just doing this حالي حال كل الناس اللي حواليني, or I'm a female doing this, which means this.
Yeah, so I think two parts to answer it in two parts. In the beginning, I was just thinking, I am me doing this.
Yeah.
And obviously, يعني if I'm racing, most of the time you're racing against men, so you know that you're the only female doing it. But I just saw it as, if I'm better than them, that's a plus, you know, like I'm competitive, or if I can beat them, then that's my win, you know. And it's, again, it's, that's not something, that's gender rivalry, I guess. Mm. And it's a natural thing to feel. But I then eventually had to acknowledge that I was a female, in the sense of, you are different. You're not a guy. And because you're a woman, and because you're doing this, there is any, whether you like it or not, it is different, you know. And I had to accept basically that I am Rima, who is a female, plus who is from Saudi, plus who is doing this for the first time, you know, like, yeah, or is doing things for the first time. But it wasn't, I'm not the type of person, I am always like the girl that gets along with everybody. I'm not, ما عندي إنه هذه بنت ولد, they're all, it's the same. It's not any, I never differentiated genders, let's say, yeah, in that sense. But I had to, in this case, to say that, to give myself space and acknowledgement for what I was doing, and even whether you like it or not, you're setting a precedent here, and other women in other fields and other circumstances have felt this way, and the only way to overcome it in my case is you have to accept it and be like, okay, yeah, this is what I am doing, but I don't take it personally, I don't take it to heart, I just acknowledge, you know, yes, I am Rima and I'm female and I'm racing. Like, that's, I mean, it's, I'm saying it in a very like disconnected way, but it's very simple in that sense for me. And no, I have to use, let's say, I've been dealt a card. Again, I used this expression with you earlier. I've been dealt a card, and now I just need to learn how to play it, kind of thing. You know, like, this is the card that I've been given. And everybody has that, you know, whether it's like a stereotype, whether it's an experience that you've had in your life, whether it's something bad, you know, you're given, you need to deal with it, take it and make something of it. Don't take it and bury it, because that's just going to drag you down. But that's the thing, where I could have taken it and been like, oh, I'm a woman, I can't. But it's just, no.
Decided to crush that stereotype. Yeah. Think women can't drive? Not only can we drive, we can race.
We can race, yeah. And we can beat you too.
Yeah. Were you, I'm curious, Yanni, that was a very, Yanni, that was a very positive note.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm just wondering, did you see any, like, were you treated differently, to put it in simple terms?
Yeah, definitely. I would say, if I can sit and think, yeah, there was a lot of times, and not just times, like I عشت في السعودية, like 100% I was treated differently in terms of this, like, مثلاً, I was active, you know, being an active athletic girl wasn't something that, let's say, everyone was supportive of, you know. أنا حب السيارات, that's not something everyone is supportive of. So there are a lot of things, I guess, in my, as I grew up, that I was used to these barriers, because شخصيتي was, I guess, different to other girls, or maybe not different, just I liked unconventional things at the time. And so I guess those things for me, or those stereotypes, I was so used to, that now that I'm racing, and now that I'm kind of doing things different, or like setting a precedent in this case, I'm just taking it on as an عادي بس I know it's not عادي بس مرة اتعودت إنه I'm so used to thinking okay I'm used to being judged let's say or I'm used to getting the no you can't do that it's not something it's not safe oh wow that one it's not
I
safe
I can imagine
oh my god so not with racing wasn't I couldn't even ask that question but like I didn't own a motorbike a buggy any of those things like we were not allowed because it's not safe and it wasn't because of gender like even the boys weren't allowed but it's the idea that there was restrictions that I was kind of as I was growing up just that's the way life was for me
yeah.
And when I got older and I faced these like let's say from مثلا the guys that I'm racing and so when you're racing and they know that you're a girl sometimes guys can be a little bit aggressive sorry Dean. Not that you got not that was the thing but they could get aggressive or they could not like the fact that you're better than them and that for me was just a plus you know I just looked at that and I'm like that doesn't affect me that only helps me you know yeah. As in like it's a and then I think the first time I got out of the car one of the Emirati guys that I was racing against looked at me they were sweating coming out of the car when I was racing against him like انتي من فين جيتي you know I was like oh I don't know if I literally it's the first time I'm racing this is like but like it's the reaction I guess is like stares or like people let's say the media they'll give you like a handicap when they talk about you you know like you're a woman and sometimes that happens that I'm not very like and it's I guess the way I take it is I don't give it light any ما أعطي اهتمام for it to become a thing I just say it's easy said than done but I guess because I'm so focused and driven towards this goal that I whatever is coming in the way I'm like okay bye you know yeah. Like the fly swapper thing you know yeah. Bye go shoot and then some other times like you know like when for me it's when it's a personal thing it or when something happens to me let's say that is like a lot of the times people ask me a question and I have to think about the answer because it's something that I haven't thought about
yeah.
And that's so. I'm not, those are the difficult things for me. It's not necessarily a difficult question. Could be a difficult question, but it's just those are the things that I find hard because I'm sharing because I'm having to like expose myself, if you like.
Yeah.
We know what to ask now. We're gonna try to ask these questions.
Yeah, but I think I feel like I'm already doing that. No,
I really like it. I have to say no. I really like how you approach this. أنا هذا سؤال الجندر حتى ما أحب إني أسأله. To be honest, زي ما قلتي لنا, I don't like to give it light. I was very uncomfortable asking, بس حسيت إنه ترى this is just if we're being realistic.
Yeah.
It must have contributed. To it has value, whether or not يعني how much value we give it, but it has a little bit of value. يعني it's there. الحين you don't have to let it affect you, but it's there.
Yeah.
But that's the only reason I asked about it. But I really like how you approach it. I feel that, and it's like actually, يعني إذا تفكرون فيها يعني, it's very nice to be told that you can do something when you know for a fact that you can.
Yeah.
يعني it shouldn't be a downer at all. If anything, it's like okay, I can't wait to prove you wrong. عرفتي?
Yeah.
Which is what you're doing, and I think that's fantastic. صراحة يعني.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
But sort of, I want to contradict your point, Trey, to make this more interesting.
Okay.
And I'm sure you kind of understand how guys feel
mm-hmm.
when a woman overtakes them. And it's like it's scientifically proven that women have much smaller sized brains than men.
Oh, and, did you just say that? Okay.
Relax. I think it's wonderful to see that. And I mean, there is a misconception that
yeah.
it's a man. Guys are better than
this can help me. Why don't you tell me how does it feel when a girl yeah. will overtake you?
I don't know. I've never, to be honest, I've never had that feeling. I
or
oh no, I
think?
Did. I did.
How would you think?
Oh, actually, look at how much I don't care.
Okay.
I was overtaken by a girl. I didn't even remember.
Oh, sahabi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't care. Like she's okay, fat. I learned from her. She passed me. I want to learn what she's doing better than me.
Okay, then maybe you're a different and case. Let's think of what you think the male. Like as a male, what would he? What, how would they feel if you were to?
But By the way, no, Abby not only passed me, she hit me while passing. I was still cool about it.
Props to you, Abby.
It was a good, it was a clean move. It's okay. So what were you saying? You said if.
Yeah, like, so you asked me, how do you think that a man would feel if a woman, like, I mean, I guess
it hurts their ego. I mean,
yeah.
Again, there is this misconception that I think women don't drive well. Mm. It's one of those stereotypes you're crushing. Yeah. And I guess it hurts. They have this image that they're better.
Yeah.
And when that reality is no longer reality, I guess it's painful.
Yeah, I guess, I feel that, but I also feel that the whole idea, the ego and the strength and the fact that, you know, I represent, like, racing drivers, like, not a lot of them are, like, macho, you know, they're not really, like, you know, in the whole Formula One, how you look at it in the past, like, they're big, like, guys who smoke cigarettes, I don't know what. Like, that's not the case. Most of the racing drivers that I've met are, like, really small, thin, you know, guys who are very, like, serious and they're very, like, not square per se, but they think about it. Perfectionists, let's say. I would say that what I would feel is when they feel like, let's say, a woman or a girl is within them, most of them eventually get over the fact, actually, that I'm a girl and I'm beating them, because they realize then that we're all here doing the same thing and we're learning the same skill, let's say. But it's usually early on in the season or early on when you're first competing against them that they get hurt, because they think that they're stronger, and the idea of a man being the powerful, the protector, the I don't know what, like, comes into play. This is like a stereotype, I guess. But eventually, no. Eventually, you put on your helmet, no one is, there's no gender, it's just this, and they don't call you by your first name in racing, by the way. They call you by your last name. Oh. So I'm not Rima, I'm Jafali. And also, they don't see my face, they only see my helmet. So you don't know if I'm a girl or a guy.
On the outside, it all looks the same.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a nice thing that you don't know, like, whether it's a girl or a guy. I mean, the racers generally know, but if you're watching, you wouldn't know unless the girl takes her helmet off. Wow. Her helmet.
Hopefully, the girl never does that.
Rima, yeah. I want to flip the question back at you.
Okay.
Do you feel like you ever need to or have pressure to overcompensate because you're in a male dominant sport and maybe you're carrying the weight of women out there, that you have something to prove and that might you know, negatively influence your performance in some way?
Yeah, I think this is something that I dealt with as a child, actually, because I was always involved in, like, this male dominant areas of, like, football and basketball and like everything I did was very male dominated. So the front of being strong, not crying, putting up a wall, I was all of those things. And I was the aggressive, the in your face girl, you know, that's like, I don't take anything from anyone, you know, like, I was that person. And that's just how I navigated the areas of my, like, and as I was growing up, in order for me to do what I loved, that's how I felt that I needed to do it. Obviously, looking back now, I didn't have to be that person. And I'm not that person, I guess. I'm now, I've overcome that complex of having to prove and having to be strong and having to be guarded all the time, because that comes with the territory of I need to prove myself, and the guard does come up, definitely. I like the question.
Thanks. You also touched upon, like, people's image that it's a dangerous sport.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say to people? How do you make your mom feel comfortable about what you're doing? What would you say to your mom or your grandmother, for example, to describe?
Well, most people, I just try and I tell them, yeah, it is, in the beginning, you know, because people ask you a question, they generally want you to answer it the way the answer that they want, right? So I always start with, yeah, it is dangerous, but I think what I would say, the danger is what you make of it. In the end of the day, I'm doing as much as I can to stay out of danger in the car by putting in the time, by becoming stronger physically, by being more mentally alert. Like, I'm putting in everything I can to mitigate danger. But I think danger is everywhere. And I'm not going to be cliche and say this, but like, if I was a triathlete and I was riding a bike, I can get massive and like really bad injuries if I fall off a bike because my legs are attached to the bike or my feet are.
Yeah.
So you can fall, you can break your ribs. But that's not considered a dangerous sport. Why? And it's just that the connotation is not there.
Yeah.
With racing, like any sport, there is danger involved. American football, there are football players that get concussions and have to keep going on, and their brain is literally rattled. It's damaged brain, and it's not considered dangerous. Why? Because it's not cars and it's not fast. Well, if you're running into someone full force and full speed, you are, Annie. It is so my answer to the question is, it is dangerous to the extent that anything can be dangerous that is sports related, speed related. I think all sports can be, and it's just a matter of some are more than others. But, you know, in the end of the day, I guess my mom in particular, she is very supportive because she's seen what racing has made me and has even before I started racing. But she is actually, I have to thank you, Mama. Tell you why I'm going to thank her, because I started thinking about racing. I told you like a while ago, 2014. And I didn't decide to race for 3 years after the thought of me racing. But I would tell my mom very casually, oh, I'm going on a track day. Track day meaning like I take the car out on the track. But it's not racing. It's just taking the car for fun. And I'll drop these things here and there. And she's such a supportive mom. And like, I am who I am because of her and all of that. But she saw in me how much I was enjoying these experiences in this car. And she saw that it meant so much to me. So and how I started racing was also a Jeddah Saudi. And I decided, okay, I'm going to move back for work opportunities. I was working on a project. All of that. I had other plans. But when I went to Saudi and I had like time for that was myself, I was working for myself, my time was my own. That's when racing, and that's another thing that I'm thankful for, that I could kind of set that time. I had the capacity and the ability to put pause and say, or not pause, I was working, but I put pause and say, huh, what do you want to do? And it was that time where I'd moved back, and it's hard moving back to Saudi, being abroad for like 8 years, and you know, you're so used to your independence, your space, all of this stuff. My mom would come to me and like maybe for like at least like four or five months, ha mata hatruh, ha mata hatibda, ha. I'm like, mama, khalas, stop, you know. And yeah. She's and she beautiful. Didn't know what it meant to race either. She just knew that it meant so much to me. So nice. So her support in that sense was so annoying for me. I was like, stop. I was like, stop asking me. I'll do it when I'm ready, you know. And that was it, because I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to accept that I wanted it so much. But she could see that I wanted it. And then eventually I decided I had to make a decision, either committing to this project for 2-3 years or saying no to everything and saying I'm going to race. And then that happened. And yeah, that's how our support of my dad's another story, though. He wasn't as excited as my mom, 100%. He was definitely worried. He was definitely worried to start off with.
Where did his reservations come from?
That whole danger, it's not safe, you know. Like he knows that I'm not someone who makes irrational decisions. He knows my character and stuff. So I think that helped. And he trusts me, alhamdulillah. Again, I have to thank both of them, Baba and Mama in this case. Because without them, I wouldn't have been able even to think or to take these steps or to venture into this world, because this, without support for anything, whether it's like a feeling that you have. If someone doesn't give you a hug back, yeah. it's not a hug, right? So they supported these ideas. And in, even though my dad was reserved, he was silent about it. He didn't say no. He didn't come back and say, la ma yinfa. He just stayed quiet to see where what this was, where what was going on. And I respect him so much for that, because he saw that it meant a lot to me. He wasn't comfortable, but he didn't say no to it. And eventually, like, it was really nice to see them both there at my race, and it was like a very emotional moment when they were both there, and they were really happy for me and seeing me kind of doing my thing and them accepting that and them being proud of that was amazing. Alhamdulillah.
Allah, I can imagine. Allah khalihum lik.
Ameen.
And it is really nice to see how supportive they were in Riyadh, and like being around you and just.
Yeah, they were supportive of you as well. They were so excited. He came first, and they're like, "Take pictures, go!" You know, and they put us there, and it's like cheer squad, which is again like the best to have. And my aunts came out. Like just now, my race was on my birthday, and it happened 2 years in a row where I was racing on my birthday. Yeah, and my friends came out as well. My sister, my brother, like some of the people flew in. So just that in itself, when you have that, you know, support, and like, that's unbelievable for me. That's when I'm like, I feel so small, because it's like, I can't, it's too good to be true. You know, I'm like sitting there and feeling so grateful for everything that's happening to me and having all of these people around, because without them and without you guys now sharing the story, this wouldn't be a thing, you know, for me or for anyone. It's very important to have that support system, definitely.
Yeah, we're huge fans.
So am I.
Reema, you mentioned that your mom بعد شافت التغيير, or how who you were before and how racing has changed you. So I'm curious to know how does that change look like? Who were you before racing?
So this is a good question, huh? I thought about
now
it.
Now we're
though.
Getting deep.
Yeah, but I've thought about it before, actually, because it was... I guess before racing, I was this person who was looking for fulfillment, looking for a route, you know, like you graduate university and no one tells you that, you know, the world is open, and it's up to you to decide what to do. No one tells you, you know, you graduate high school, oh, mabruk, alf mabruk, all of that. الحين رايح الجامعة, oh, mashallah, okay, go to jama. خرجنا جامعة, حتشتغلي. But where are you going to work? What are you going to do? Where do you feel connected? I had to try. I had to go and experience this stuff. I needed to, you know, to go get into a job that I didn't like. I needed to try. And I never, and even like when it didn't work out and I got a job and I was trying to get a full-time contract with a visa situation, it didn't end up working, but I tried. But there was a lot of trying involved. And without that, I guess, I forgot your question, but I'm going to keep going. Without the trying, I wouldn't have been able to, be where I am and have said like, okay, I've done these things and I've tried these things and now I am racing. Like that's still too hard to be true. But what was the question again? I forgot.
Just about how you've changed.
How I've changed. Yeah. So how I changed was, I guess before racing, I was going through the what is it called? The rhythm, or like what's expected of you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was, you know, I went to work and I did that and I felt good about that and it was fulfilling and I was learning a lot. But there was
going through the system.
Going through the motions. That's the system and the motions. Yeah. So I was doing all that and I was still learning and I felt like it was great to learn and I wanted to keep learning. If I came to Saudi for the idea of growth and learning. Mm. But I guess what happens, or what she saw, my mom, was before racing, I was just like I need to do that. I need to do that. I need to work out. It was things that I needed to do, or things, not things that I wanted, or things that I then made me like happy and glowing, you know, like, you know, your mom can see who you are, like even before you can. I feel like, at least with my mom, she saw that racing put a like smile on my face, that made me glow, that I actually think that I am a happier person now than I was before. And not to say that I wasn't happy before. I was happy to the knowledge of what I knew happiness was. But after racing and after experiencing that sense of like, okay, this is cheesy, wait for it. This sense of like whole, like I felt like there's a part of me that is whole now. Like, and not, and I'm not saying every aspect, but something is fulfilled. I just became an overall better person. And in the sense of I'm like happier now. I care about, I have the capacity to do more for other people as well, to like, let's say ask about, like, imagine coming back from work every day and just coming, seeing your mom or your sister, whoever is around you, and not asking them how they are because you're so preoccupied with what's happened on your day. You come in, you're like, oh, let's go have dinner. And it's just like that. But what ended up happening for me is I ended up, because I was satisfied, I come back like, oh, how was your day? My joe was better because of that, you know. And I think my thing would be is find the thing that makes you like comfortable and makes you like not just happy in the sense of you can't keep chasing things, because you can keep going after things and wanting and not feeling. It means you're not getting something out of it. Try something else. Try different way of doing it. If you're not able to get to your running madri pace, maybe the way you're training is wrong. Maybe you need to change your training. Maybe you need to train less. I don't know. But there's no point in just keep going at the same point and trying and then feeling like you're failing. Like, there, you shouldn't do that, basically. Yeah. Don't do that.
Right. I think someone famous said stupidity is trying to do the same thing and expecting different results.
Yeah.
Not a good idea.
No, not at all.
I had a random thought while you were saying that. It's interesting. So you're basically on a surface level, like you're driving around in circles.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm doing.
And yeah, there are other cars that are all doing the same. You're just trying to go as fast as you can, and mm-hmm. it can seem meaningless, but it's really fascinating how when you put so much dedication, so much heart in it, and you're pursuing perfection, you're trying to get, there's a theoretical maximum, like the best possible lap you could do with the given conditions, the grip level, the aerodynamics, capabilities of the car, the track, the weather, and that's what you're striving for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting how
that's something happening to me, like how, on a personal level.
How so much can come out of something that seems so simple on the outside, but
yeah, there's, I guess, that metaphor, like the analogy there is that everything needs to fit into place for it to be a perfect lap. And that, I would say, is the same with myself. Like, I'm now realizing that there are areas of myself that I'm now willing to venture into and explore, that maybe areas that I haven't in the past, of like, and then let's say I felt like one thing I'm working on now is like my, on the surface level, is like my fitness and my stamina, and that's purely related to cars and me wanting to be a better racer, mm-hmm. in the sense of my physicality of it. But in the other sense, like, I'm also want emotional clarity. I want to feel like I'm like on a race day, I don't want to come in with a little bit of, you know, clouds, or I don't want to come in with a bit aggression or anger, because that's immediately puts into my performance of the car. So if I'm like angry or if I'm stressed, I can't drive at the let's say at the limit or at the perfect lap, because I'm not there completely. You need to be connected, for not just to the car but to yourself. So I think that's something that really changed for me, is that I'm now wanting to look inside of myself and work on me from inside. And it happened because of racing. It didn't happen because I want to be faster. It's, yes, that's one side of things, but it's affecting my life in a much bigger picture that I initially thought.
Yeah. Can you, I want to dive into the mental side of the sport a bit, because I think it's a big, it's mm-hmm. a big part of it. You know, you mentioned being in the right mentality when you're going into it. There's this concept called red mist. Tell us more.
Okay, so like red mist is like, you know, in cartoons when like you know, the like Tom and Jerry are fighting and then you see like fire coming out of their ears and like red eyes.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
red mist. Okay, so that can happen when you're racing. If let's say you know, you're trying to get past someone and you're fighting for position and something, and someone bumps you, or you feel like you're someone has unjustly like pushed you off track, or you know, whatever, like you get hit, let's say, and you're fighting for position. That happened to me like early on, like two months into racing, and I used to be this like asabiya, I had short of temper, I was like aggressive. This is in, I'm talking about like high school and below. So like now 10 years ago, like a very long time ago, that I haven't experienced this side of myself. And this race at the time, I was trying to get past this guy and I'm like forcing my way through and he's like bumping, pushing me, trying to not let me through. Eventually I get pushed out wide and I lose my position. He goes past me. And all I feel and see is rage. Like I am so angry. And I'm like clenching the steering wheel and I'm driving so aggressively that I'm driving slower because I'm so, you know, disjointed. I'm not smooth. I'm not collected. I'm not calm. I'm doing everything wrong because I am like not seeing clearly. So what ends up happening is I end up losing my position, not doing well in the race. Everything goes to shit, sorry. And it's because I lost it. And that's what, for me, that point, when I finished the race, I came out of the race, I realized I was so upset and I went to the team. I'm like, he pushed me. And then we calmed down and we looked back at what happened and it wasn't his, and okay, he didn't do something very bad, but my reaction was too over the top, too intense, too uncalled for, but to the extent that it affected my performance and affected my driving. Ever since that day, I've now looked at it as I never want to feel like that ever again, because that sense of losing control is never something that I'm gonna, if it's under my control, I don't want it to happen ever again. So now, say for example, I'm in the situation and someone does happen, it happens often in racing where you get cut off or whatever. I just have to take a breath, you know, and instead of clenching the steering wheel, I do the complete opposite now. I like move my fingers, I like loosen my fingers up and I take a breath. And it's just, the thing is, I could easily just choose to hassle and go into the other rage, but I just choose to take a breath, recalibrate, reassess, and then you can go past him another turn, you have time, you know, it's not just end of the world, you know, and yeah. It's something that now I know, like it's a part of me as well, like that side that I can just lose it. I need to be able to now control it, and that's why I'm looking at this all emotional side of things, venturing into things that I haven't done in the past to control all of these emotions and how to be like very at one with myself, like I said, in every situation.
And mastering that skill, yani, once you master it, it's going to affect all areas of your life.
Exactly.
I can only imagine how hard it is, yani, being in that situation.
Yeah.
Mo, have you ever felt that?
I felt it in a slightly different way. I don't know if this is called red mist too, but I was very, very focused on hitting my breaking points and being on the right racing line. And I was really, really, really in the zone. Mm. Checkered flag came out. I missed it the first lap. I missed it the second lap. I think I couldn't see anything but was happening. I was in another world almost.
Oh wow!
So
the race ended basically. So you didn't know it ended.
I didn't know it ended, and I just kept going.
Oh wow!
And
then did you get a penalty?
Yeah, I don't
for
know
that?
If it was a race or maybe it was the end of a session.
Okay,
I think it was the end of a session because there weren't cars around.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's like in the zone. That's a complete focus, I want to say. That's beautiful, I think, that it's so, that you're so involved in there that the only way you would stop is if you didn't have gas in the car, you know, like probably.
But I think racing does that maybe more so than other sports because of the level of focus it requires. Mm-hmm. Your life is on the line. And I think it happens more so when you're maybe a bit drained, you're exhausted, you're trying to, you know, put in that extra just to make sure you're staying on the line. If you want to push the pace a bit, you need to be extra alert of what might happen to react very quickly to catch the car.
Interesting
very. Stuff.
That feeling though of your life is on the line, is that a conscious thing that you guys think of while you're just doing your thing?
Personally, it never comes to mind unless I'm in a bad situation.
Yeah.
Like, let's say I'm losing control or the car doesn't. Sometimes you end up becoming a passenger. You get into situations, if you slide off onto like slippery grass, there's really not much you can do. You need to avoid getting into that situation. Once you're in a situation like that and your car is spinning out of control, you're waiting for
impact.
And moments like that, you think about it a bit.
I think it's going to hurt. You know, I don't think that deeply as in I can lose my life. No, I don't think that far because it's, and I guess for me, these cars feel very safe and very, and I've also experienced some impact in the cars, but not like, because as a learner or a person who's learning something new, you're going to hit and you're going to make mistakes and you're going to hit in walls and those are going to happen. But after the first time I experienced like going into a barrier, let's say, the first time it's just a shock because it's like, you know, when you go into something really quickly, but you're so strapped in so tight, everything is so tight that it's just the impact that scares you.
Yeah, it's really solid.
It's
reassuring how safe it feels when you crash. Also, I worry more about the car.
The car is like, that's the most thing that hurts. Because in general, alhamdulillah, all the time you get out of the car like quite okay. But you look at the car and it just looks horrible. It hurts.
Yeah.
But where do also the point about the crashes? But yeah, so then with the crashes, and he said this thing that I now identify with, that you're a passenger when something goes wrong and halas, like there's no grip in the car, you can't fix anything, and you know what, there's going to be something that hits you. You literally, there's the thing they tell you, especially in single-seaters, you need to remove your hands from the wheel. You can't hold the wheel. Yeah. If you do, the wheel can hit back at you and hurt you, break your hand, break your wrist. Like, that's the most common thing that happens is, so you literally put your hands to your chest and you just brace for impact. Like, it's like, it's coming, you know, like, and then you take it. Like, it's, and for me, like, the worst injuries have been, like, bruises. It's because of something I did, not something that the car did or what, you know, it's generally my fault. I think, fearing for your life is not something. Hanam, I think we scared her. Shwey, no.
Yeah, yeah. It's never.
Let's change. I feel like you're uncomfortable.
Honestly, what I'm feeling right now is, wow, how amazing it must be to have something that you love this much, that you can talk about it in this way. I don't know, as an outsider who hasn't experienced what you're experiencing, I mean, to hear you guys saying and that you care about the car more than yourself, not in those exact words, but in that sense, and I know what's coming, I know how to prepare for it. Honestly, it's amazing to me because to have something, to have a deep passion like that, I think it's a rare gift. I don't think everyone gets to have that, and maybe they do, but they keep it buried inside. They never do anything with it. And so to see people who are this passionate about something is always just so beautiful to me, Fayani. That's what I'm feeling.
That's so sweet. I didn't see that. I was Maybe we should stop talking about it. But I guess I never heard it from that perspective. But it's very observant, and I guess we're a bit crazy in that sense too. And خايفين على السيارة.
No, but so earlier you brought up a good point about, like, when you think of racing, it's like literally you're going in circles, and so if you look at it that way. And then I started thinking about all other sports. It's as a concept, it's like, why, you know what I mean? يعني مثلا I'm chasing a ball to أدخلها يعني into a basket or into it's, if you're gonna conceptualize everything, that everything seems like mediocre, like it's.
But you know what? I think everything in life is like that.
I agree. So I started thinking about everything, and I'm just like, it's literally what you make of it. Literally, تبغى تحط الوقت, تبغى تحط الeffort. It becomes something. You don't want to do that, it becomes nothing. فيعني the same exact thing can mean the world to you, and it can mean nothing to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is just fascinating, because it goes to show that كل شيء في الدنيا, it gets its value من what people put into it.
Absolutely.
وإذا الناس ما حطوا في شيء, خلاص it loses its value, no matter how valuable, quote unquote, it is.
Yeah, absolutely. There's this point, I don't think we've touched upon yet, but right now, I don't know how long this is going to last, but driving is a big part of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
It's how we commute, at least in this part of the world, how most of us commute. And I think, I feel that being a race car driver has made me a lot more capable of avoiding. I think I've avoided many accidents on the road, potential mm-hmm. accidents on the road because of it. I think... aside from it being a dangerous sport, I think it can make you a lot safer overall as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Just for those of you listening, thinking that this might not be a good idea there, I think a lot can come out of it.
Yeah. And it fulfills that side, I guess, as well, of you that is, that wants that speed, and once you end up doing everything in a controlled setting, and then when you leave the racetrack, I actually want the complete opposite. I want to chill. I want, like, peace and quiet. I want to see my friends. I want to have dinner. I don't want to, like, mad if, like, go and, like, I don't know. I, the energy is all into that, that I want the complete opposite when I leave the track. So it is, I think I agree with you, to say that, like, even when I'm driving from the racetrack, I'm, like, on chill mode. Like, it's probably listening to podcasts, listening to a chill song. I'm not an aggressive driver. I'm not, like, it's a... That could be my phone. It's not a place where you feel like, because you're a race driver, you are like that outside of the racetrack. Yeah. No, I don't think so. I think it's chill.
It's literally what you do, Yanni. Yeah. It's your job, essentially. Mm. And
yeah, I think I need to be a bit more chill outside the racetrack. Something I'm actively working on.
I chose not to comment.
Maybe it's just me then. Yeah, but I'm not sure. No, but it
definitely releases a lot of that energy that's there, and in a safe way.
Yeah.
For people listening who are intrigued, they maybe want to give this a try. Want to try getting involved. What's the best way? How do you suggest people get started?
So for me, the way I did it was I reached out to the local, like, racing school or racing federation, because every country has a racing federation, or most countries do. And you generally, like, sign up and you tell them, okay, I want to race. How can I race? They give you, like, a booklet, and it's actually, like, similar to a driving test in the sense where you have to learn. It's even easier. You need to learn, like, the safe, like, what are the flags and the safety things that you need to do safely.
Is this with the Saudi Motor Federation?
I did it in the UK.
Okay,
mine in the UK, it's similar in the sense where here, I think in Saudi, because we don't have a racing tracks, they do it bil Bahrain or bil Emirat. But you go and you do this, you learn the flags and you learn the safety things that you need to do on track. You do a very quick written test. And then you do, I think you have to be on the track with an instructor, and they just see that you're safe on track. Not that you're driving very quickly just that you know what to do when these things happen. But for Saudi, you can get accreditation and license licensing through the Saudi Motorsport Federation, and they have, I think, not completely clear to what are the exact ways to do it, but the easiest thing would be to reach out and ask them. And I think things are changing often, so good to ask. I'm not the best.
This just occurred to me, and I'm just curious if you have something, if you have a... racing is stressful sometimes, especially before a race. Do you have a pre-race routine that sort of gets you in the zone?
Yeah, it's funny. So for me, it's like I'm not stressed. I'm actually excited. So I'm like...
What?
Yeah. It's very weird. I explain this to a lot of like people, like my engineers, people around me. They're like, what are you like? You know, I get so excited. So the night before the race, I probably wake up like, you know, when you go to a fun fair and you're a kid and you wake up early in the morning because it's like, can we go now? I get up at least twice before just to check the time to see. I have to get up now. And then I get up, I go in the morning, I have my breakfast or whatever it is that I do. I listen to some nice chilled music or like a podcast or something just like completely irrelevant to what I'm doing. I get to the racetrack, probably see my team. We quickly talk about, and I try and do it early on. We talk about what I need to do and what are the things that I need to work on and stuff. And then after that, I am chatting, I'm talking to people, I'm like making jokes. I get restless. Like that's the one thing I do get. It's not nerves. It's more of like restlessness. So like I need to keep moving, distract myself. That sort of stuff. And it's generally, I have to do like not racing related. It has to be like it's outside of racing. I need to disconnect from racing before the race. And then the funny thing is I just recently found out because this interviewer, I'll tell you another story. So what happens is you get ready. You know what you need to do. You have all of the things that they've been telling you you need to do. You put on your helmet, helmet meaning that like I'm now closer to the zone that I want to be in, all of this stuff. So you get in the car, they strap you in, and they make you wait like annoyingly long before a race. You know, sometimes you're in the car for like half an hour, sometimes 40 minutes, sometimes it's raining and you're in the car and I have no roof in my car. So you get an umbrella and you're cold, whatever, like all of this stuff happens. And then finally the time is they're going to send you out on track. And this is the time where now I'm like, no one can speak to me. I'm on my own. I'm like, my visor, the helmet is completely shut. And even before it's completely shut, I kind of get in a zone of like silence. It's not even thinking. It's just like silence. And then when I get on the track, this is a new realization. I start humming a song, okay? And it's generally like a random Disney theme song, a movie theme song, like it's or like a very common song, and I start humming.
You have to give us a sample.
This is hilarious. I'll tell you, I didn't realize I did this. I didn't realize, okay? And then my
answer and put them on hands free. Just get an insight.
It's my granddad. Ahlan, you know, كيف الحالة حتأخر اليوم. I'm visiting them, so they're I guess they're asking me where I am. But I guess if they hear this, they'll be very happy.
We won't keep you too long.
So I close my visor. I'm singing, humming this song, and then with race start. Before the race starts, you're on the starting grid of stuff, and at this point in Riyadh. This presenter comes to me and he asked me, he's like, Rima, what are your pre-race routines? Do you have any pre-race routines? And I had just finished singing a song, you know? So I was like, actually, I think I hum a few songs. He's like, what song are you humming? What song are you singing? Any songs in particular or something? I'm like, actually, it's the Star Wars theme song. So like I didn't know I did that until he asked me what you do, and I'm not saying every single race, but probably like almost most of them I'll have like, you know, I'll go da na 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 na, and like I'm not a singer, I don't have a voice, nothing like that. But that's it's just amazing. how I get in the zone, you know. I have to like do something super lighthearted, and I went on like national television. Faliha. Yeah, I realized that. That's how I realized
it. Caught you at the right moment. Talk about timing.
Did. Yeah, it was really funny. This guy
knew when to reach in with the mic.
Oh my God, it was really funny. The realization was funny.
But you were done, huh?
No, it was before the race. Just
no, but you were done singing. Done,
yeah. Oh, I was done singing. Yeah. I had just finished singing.
I would have like YouTube.
No. But you'll hear me telling him and me laughing and him like, oh my God. You know, yeah, it was very funny because I think most racing drivers like are like quite serious. They listen to some like, I don't know, music, whether it's techno or like something hype. I'm like, I'm really not that. I'm like, complete opposite. I need,
you know, I'll try that next time I try to, you know, it's not, doesn't compare to a race, but yeah, before a workout, maybe that's gonna get me hyped. Maybe that's the key.
Yeah, yeah, because like
Disney
like,
or some, Frozen or
yeah like what is it that come on, go for it.
What is that?
I have no idea.
Oh, you suck at this.
But yeah, it's whatever works for you, you know. The dance music didn't work for me. So definitely now I know it's I wouldn't listen to Disney theme songs, but I clearly hum them. So it's funny. It's very
amazing.
Rima, I have one last question.
Okay.
You're very yani mashallah yani khafifa. And you have like a very light presence, and you know, it's very obvious in it. You're someone who's just doing their thing, and yani subhanallah, finas, you can tell and they know that they have an impact. Okay, there's something about it. It's a little bit of arrogance. Ala in the tarana, I know I'm important. I know I matter. You don't have that. You're just literally zayma guilty yani a lot of times. I'm just being myself. And I know this might be a tough question, but when was there a moment or like when was one moment اللي استوعبت فيها أن, whether it's someone telling you something, someone sharing with you an impact, أي شيء اللي you're like, whoa, I'm doing something huge.
Yeah, so it happened several times because it's imagine. Always like yeah. hard to believe that what I'm doing. The first time was on my first race in Abu Dhabi. I came after the race. They're interviewing me. How does it feel? This is what they asked me. How does it feel to be the first Saudi to race? What is it? To ever race? And I literally had not. I just looked at them, and I was like, "Oh my God! Yeah, I didn't realize because of the race and the rush, and I guess." What I'm trying to say is that sometimes I'm surprised by what is the word
bumblebees.
No, I think like okay, so I'll go back to just the question they asked me. The question that helped. Now I can think about something else, but so they asked me the question. That question makes me feel like. What like whoa, like that just happened to you. You just did that. Like you are this person for the and what it makes me most of the time it makes me feel like I'm like surprised and humbled. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like and then I get shy. I don't know why, it's my natural reaction to get shy. And then it's like and then it's to a certain point I have to start praising and acknowledging myself, but it's so hard for me to do that. Like I think for me till now it's a thing I'm dealing with that I need to acknowledge the position I'm in or who I am, like not in a personal Rima sense with maybe you know me and my friends. It's more of who I am now, you know, what is it that and I think people always ask me like I mean great questions, but I'm caught by surprise. Like it's how do you feel your impact is on other women who are going through things that are challenging and for me I always like to make it personal and I always take it back to this is how I felt, this is because I can't give advice that I don't feel like I'm experienced enough to share, you know. So yeah. What I try to do is when I feel this way or when I'm given a question that is shocking or a little bit rattling, I'll just ask myself, you know, what is it that you would want to, what you want to, what would you want to hear if someone asked you that? And then for me, most of the time I'd be like, I want to hear someone's experience. I want to be, I don't want someone to tell me, put your fears aside and go after it. No, like I want to hear how I actually, how this person actually did it. Yeah. How did they feel? How did they, so it's hard sometimes because I don't have the answers. I don't know because I haven't thought about it, but I did it, but I haven't thought about it. So it's really good for me. Like these questions that you're asking me as well. And they make me think about how did I get to where I am? What it is that I did in order to get to this place? Cause sometimes I really do feel like because I'm now at a point where I'm really just trusting this journey and I'm like, I'm confident enough to fail. I'm confident enough to fall. I'm confident enough to like get banged up. I'm trusting. So I would say that trust is making me willing to explore and to venture into the unknown, let's say. And another thing that I'm currently learning, which is I think something I would have liked to hear before and from other people, is I've been asked to do a lot of things recently and like, you know, given a lot of cool opportunities. And it's so hard for me to say no, like so. And I don't, even if you are a friend of mine and you ask me something, it's hard for me to say no. I just, or you want me to go somewhere with you, I can't say no. So, and imagine someone who's offering something really cool and shiny and whatever, you know, and you're not sure about it. And a lot of these things and opportunities that I was given, I wasn't sure about because I've never done it. I've never experienced it. I don't know how it would feel. And when I start asking myself and I start second guessing myself and saying, how should I have? No, you know, is it right? Did I reject this? Because why did I reject this? Or like, for example, I had to make a decision. Sorry, and this point is still not clear because I'm going through it. But like, it's like someone asked me, gave me this really cool racing opportunity. And it was so cool. It was free. All of like, it just was so shiny. Okay. And I was so unsure. And I kept like asking people for their opinion. I kept making sure and asking like, do you think I should do this? Asking someone else, doing research. And I felt like I was kept trying to look for the answer, but the answer was just no. Rima wasn't comfortable doing this. That's why I was seeking this affirmation from other people, because mm-hmm. I didn't want to do it, but I just felt like it was such a good opportunity that I needed to do it. And now what I do is, so this is gut feeling, this is what I'm trying to get at, is my gut feeling is stronger than I think. I just second guess my gut feeling because I'm like, oh, this is a cool opportunity. Oh, this could be nice. But if my gut feeling is going against it purely because because it's scared, then I will definitely go for it. Because fear is not a gut. Like, say, for example, I'm scared to do something because I don't know what will come of it. Then I will do it because it's a gut feeling of fear and of apprehension. But if it's a gut feeling of I need reassurance, then no. Then that is a no. That is not something you can get from other people, or that just means that it's not right for you. And now, might be right for you later. Maybe you get another opportunity. But that was hard for me to do, to understand that and get to that point.
I think that's very beautiful. I think, Yani, if I had to sum up, you, Yani, in the past 2 hours, no, I would say, and this is going to sound weird, but I would say the key to your success and the key to who you are is literally just knowing who you are. And because I don't think it was an easy journey for you. I don't think it came. I don't think self-awareness is easy. To me, it's the hardest thing ever. Mm-hmm. But you wouldn't have been able to take on any of the things that you've taken on had you not been self-aware.
Yeah.
And I think that's, yeah, and if I was going to take one takeaway, it's that. Because I can imagine, yani, the opportunities, yani, mashallah, I'm sure they're coming. And it's that gut feeling. And to be able to trust your gut feeling, you need to trust yourself. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have any self-awareness, if you don't know who you are, you can't possibly trust yourself. So I think, yani, it's very, very important. And I think if I had to like sum it up, that's how I would. Rima is someone who knows herself.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, she wouldn't have been able to do any of the things that she did.
Yeah, I think knowing myself is I don't know all of myself, but I'm willing to know all of myself. I think that's definitely it, that I'm willing to put myself out there to trust, to experience, to get hurt.
Yeah,
you know,
you're like, open to going down that discovery.
Yeah.
It can be a painful process sometimes.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
I think just being open to it is...
Yeah, and just being like, yeah, being honest, being real. Like, if I don't want to see you and if I didn't want to come and do this podcast, I would have just said, no, you know, I don't want to, this is not for me, maybe later, you know. But I did want to do it and I did want to come and I wanted to come at a time that was right for me. And I wanted to make sure that I was going to be true to myself and I was going to be real and I wasn't going to come and mid triathlon, mid race,
I'm really glad
I don't know what I would have told you then. I would have told you like I'm overwhelmed, I don't know what I'm doing. Like I also go through those times of like, definitely there you know, the self-realization is still happening and it's happening now.
It's not gonna stop.
It's alhamdulillah, it's been an amazing journey and it's still happening and I'm still, you know, I don't know where I'm gonna be in a year, but I'm if it was anything like the year that passed, I would be very satisfied. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I think that's a beautiful note to start to wrap things down. Yeah. Your grandfather's also calling you towards the, just a few more minutes. Towards the end of our episodes, we like to go into quick fire mode. So we're going to shoot questions come to our mind. And feel free to respond with the first thing that comes to your mind. Try to keep your answer brief. And we're just going to keep shooting and see what happens.
Okay.
Are you ready?
No.
Ready or not? Here it comes. Life in one word.
Difficult.
What's your favorite food?
Sushi.
What's a strongly held belief you have that most people would disagree with?
Strongly held belief that most people would disagree with that I have. I think at the moment it's positivity. Honestly, people are like, you're too positive. At the moment, that's it. Anything is possible. But yeah, that is it. Yeah, go for it.
What's a goal for you this year?
In one word.
One of your goals.
Make it a sentence.
I could say I want to be like fitter in the sense of at the top of my game, of my physical and mental game. So I want to work on my myself outside of the car more.
Mm-hmm. Who is Rima Al-Jafari in three words?
Daring. Caring. What's another one? Wow, this is not easy. daring. Maybe a perfectionist, I would say. It has to be three words.
Indecisive.
Okay, I have it. Daring, determined, and no nonsense. I don't know what that's too
nonsense. Interesting. One.
Yeah, I don't have a
no room for that BS.
Yeah, exactly. I try to at least. I'll smile my way through it. Yeah.
What's your biggest regret?
My biggest regret would be not going after this earlier, like not pursuing the side of my life or this aspect of my life earlier. Because it was there and it was obvious for a lot of people, but not for me, I guess. Or I guess I was just preoccupied with other things.
What are your racing aspirations for this year? So you mentioned before how you had an aspiration to finish and then top 10 and then...
Top 10, yeah. So this year, in the beginning of the year, would be fighting in the middle of the pack, so being in the middle. And then like pure happiness would be a podium. So if I can be on the top three, that would be like...
The tawfiq.
Yeah, inshallah. Sure, inshallah. Fingers crossed.
What is the... when you're looking for a specific characteristic in the people in your life, whether it's friends, partners, whatever, what's one characteristic you always look for?
Real, I think. Like just... Like when I'm sitting with someone and I'm comfortable with someone or artah, it's just they're real and they're... And not honest, but they're just honest with themselves. They're just comfortable in themselves. And that's something that's very attractive in any person for me.
This is a bit of a selfish question.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to recommend, maybe you have an interesting person in mind that you think would be interesting for us mm-hmm. as co-hosts, to host on this podcast, who do you think is the first person that would come to mind?
Who would come to mind? This is a very hard one.
It can be someone you don't necessarily have to know this person, like by personally. It can be a public figure or.
That's a funny thing. I don't have many role models. Another thing about me. So I do have people that I admire, but I wouldn't not even that far.
High standard.
No, okay. I tell you what it is. I admire their characteristics, but I never put them on like
it's they're okay. old people. I'm the same.
No. They're old people. It. Everyone is a person. There's no like on a pedestal. No one has a pedestal. I love them or I admire them, basically. Going back to the question, someone I would say that I would say curious that I have on this podcast. I've been listening to so many people talk recently on podcasts that there's so many interesting people I would say, but I don't know why I'm leaning towards a female because it's maybe what I'm.
Okay, that narrows down our options by about 50%. We can work with that. We can. That's a good start. Okay, we're gonna try to get a female.
Ellen DeGeneres. I don't know. That's
all right. Well, if we can get her
funny.
On one day.
I mean,
she's funny. She's gone through a lot of things. Yeah. You know, she'll have things to share. I guess that's who I would say.
Cool. Rima, any last words?
Any last words? I think I spoke so much. I would just say I hope you guys enjoyed me speaking and I hope it goes somewhere for you or you connected to it and somehow it would really, I mean, for me, that was a point of me doing this, you know, just sharing my story and hopefully connecting with you all.
Thank you
for listening.
Thanks. If you're interested in what's happening in Rima's world, you can follow her. She's Rima Jafali on Instagram.
Correct.
And I'm excited to see how the rest of your journey unfolds. We're rooting for you.
Me too.
Thank you, Rima. It was a pleasure meeting you, but I have to say this. Anti fakhr, to me as a female and as a Saudi, it's been an honor.
Thank you so much. Thank you guys. Well, it really means a lot. Shukran.
Now go call your granddad.
Yeah, I have to do that. Bye.
Damn, you made it all the way to the end of this podcast.
And I'm guessing you want to stay up to date with us. So please follow us on Instagram at unboxed.podcast or
check out our website, unboxedpodcast.com. Has the full history of all of our episodes and you can find us wherever you listen to your podcasts. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you name it.
We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for tuning in.
Bye bye.